This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Optimize your body and mind with IQBar's clean, functional products. Have you ever said to yourself, I don't even have time to eat? Girl, you need to throw an IQBar plant protein bar in your purse. Yes, we know you're busy. We all are. We're women. But it's beyond time to stop sacrificing your nutrition, your wellness, and your peace of mind. Try IQBar. IQ bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. Or try our delicious IQ bar sampler pack with 9 plant protein bars, 8 hydration mixes, and 4 mushroom coffee sticks. So clean, so delicious. You don't even have to think about it. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code BRAINIQ to get an exclusive offer just for our listeners. 20% off all IQ bar products, plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code BRAINIQ. IQBar.com, code BRAINIQ.
Moncrief on News Talk.
It's Make a Wish Week on News Talk. And today we're going to be talking to Isabel McCarthy and her dad, Brendan. Isabel is one of the many young people to have her wish granted by the Make-A-Wish Foundation after she received a diagnosis of Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a variety of blood cancer. She was just 14 at the time. Isabel and Brendan, good afternoon to you.
Hi,
good afternoon.
Thanks for talking to us today. Isabel, if I could start with you. Mad into sport. What sports, before all this started, what sports were you interested in?
Well, I'm hugely into horse riding and show jumping particularly, and I also did camogie.
Right, okay. And had you started to notice something was wrong or not feel right in yourself?
Kind of, a little bit. I felt, for the amount of sport I was doing, I felt a little unfit for the amount that I was doing. Which kind of, I just tossed that aside as kind of, you know, oh, I'm just unfit. That was kind of it, pretty much.
Yeah, and you had gone for blood tests and they were all clear, is that right?
Yeah, there was nothing on my blood tests coming up, and it was just like, kind of, oh, you're probably just a little unfit, maybe a little anemic, and that was about it.
Mm. And was it then sometime after that you found a lump?
Yes, yeah. It was maybe a couple of weeks after that, a month maybe. I found a lump around my kind of chest. So obviously that kind of stood out as being unusual.
And then straight back to the GP then?
Yeah, to the GP, yeah.
And after that, from what I understand, things happened really quickly after that.
Yeah, exactly. It was all very fast. So I went to the GP and she said that she wasn't particularly happy about it. So she referred to us to the CUH for an appointment the next day. So me and my mum went in there and, yeah, after they did an X-ray, a scan or whatever, and my mum was taken aside by the doctor, and at that point I kind of knew there was something up. And then after that I was brought into the room as well, and my dad was there, and I was told they're pretty sure that it was this lymphoma, and they weren't sure exactly if it was Hodgkin's or non-Hodgkin's, but that they'd send us up to Crumlin the next day.
Yeah, had you ever even heard those phrases before?
Not particularly. It's like, I'd obviously known about different types of cancers, but it wasn't exactly that familiar with these types of them.
Yeah, because it's kind of, yeah, I think a lot of people wouldn't be, or they might have heard the phrase and they wouldn't know what it is.
Mm.
And at that stage, did they describe to you what it was and what the treatment might be?
Kind of, but they couldn't tell specifically because obviously I'd had to do a biopsy and to tell which type it is, because if it's Hodgkin's and non-Hodgkin's, they're treated slightly differently.
Right, okay. And then the following day you were in Crumlin.
Yeah, the following day. So we stayed over the night in the CUH. And then the next morning we had the ambulance come and they took us up to Dublin then to Crumlin.
Right, okay. Now, you were 14 at the time. You're 16 now, so I can use this phrase. Were you crapping it?
Yeah, it was really just like disbelief, really. It was obviously a lot of tears and a lot of emotion, but it was also happening so fast that you couldn't really get your head around it particularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I suppose after, and was the biopsy, I assume that wasn't too pleasant.
It wasn't great because obviously I had to be anaesthetic. So going to like the operating room or whatever was quite intimidating and scary, and I didn't really know what was going to happen, but it was a pretty short procedure. So once I came around, then they discussed the results of the biopsy with me.
Mm. And so they were able to tell you like fairly quickly. And I suppose at that stage, did they kind of run through what the treatment was going to be?
Yeah. So once they had confirmed that it was Hodgkin's lymphoma, they said about how it would be a six month treatment plan, and it would be between Cork and Dublin in Crumlin.
Gosh. And the also, I suppose, the side effects, what effect it might have on your hair and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that was kind of more like later on, the exact like details, especially once we were given like the full plan through so many different meetings with different doctors and specialists and nurses and all this kind of stuff about like the effects of the chemo, and then the different types of chemo drugs, which ones they would have and other effects.
Yeah. Brendan, I assume, obviously, you and your wife, Julia, must have been utterly stunned when you got all this news.
Yeah, it was a huge shock. Even when, I suppose, when she went to the GP, because we had, I suppose, a couple of months earlier, we had the blood tests done and they'd come back clear. They just kind of said, look, you might need a little bit of iron supplements or whatever. Even when she went into the CUH, we were kind of thinking, you know, well, we had the blood test done, so it can't be anything too serious. But when I was in work, because that's how unconcerned I was about it, I was just thinking, oh, Juliet, you can go in with her. I'll go to work for a couple of hours. And then Juliet rang me and, yeah, said, you know, they think it's cancer. You need to get here now. So it was a huge shock. And I suppose nobody ever expects that it'll happen to them. And there's lots of different emotions around. Obviously, you'd be frightened, you'd be angry, you'd be frustrated and, you know, obviously very upset. But also then you're kind of trying to focus on what do we need to do now? You know, where do we go? What happens? And but as I said, as Isabel said, you know, it all happened really, really quickly. So you kind of don't have time to process it fully. But, you know, the treatment we got both from the second she was diagnosed, you know, even from the GP to the second she was diagnosed, the treatment we got both in CUH and in Crumlin was just fantastic. You know, they couldn't have been, they were on top of it from the second we got in and still are to this day. You know, Isabel still goes up for checkups every 6 months. And they're just amazing. They were just absolutely fantastic for the whole process.
I imagine, though, that especially in those first 2 or 3 days, you're having this huge swathe of emotion. But I assume, you know, you feel a need to kind of hold it together because, you know, it's your daughter who's kind of this is all going to happen to. And you have to try and remain calm and help her.
Yeah, you try as much as you can, and you know there's two of us there, and you know, thankfully between the two of us, the two of us weren't in the same spot at the same time. So Juliet was supporting me when I was feeling down, and I was supporting her. But we tried to, I suppose, do that as much as we could outside, away from Isabel. But obviously we had to have those conversations with her too, you know, because she would have had a lot of questions about, you know, what's going to happen and, you know, why is this happening to me, and which we would have had ourselves as well. So it took a lot of time to kind of get around that. But I suppose once all the kind of initial shock is gone, then you kind of go into coping mode and, you know, what are we going to do now? How are we going to do it? And who's going to be responsible for what, you know?
Mm, and that 6 months worth of treatment, because Juliet and Brendan do have two other kids, as well as Isabel. So even the practical aspect of that must have been really challenging.
Yeah, I suppose, we have two other children, you know, Jane and Michael. So we had to kind of look after them as well. But we had fantastic supportive family, both here in Farran, but also in my family in Greenwood. But I suppose we took on different roles. So my wife, Juliet, was fantastic. She was with Isabel the whole time. You know, she was at every appointment, at everything. And she really got into the mode of, I'm going to be responsible for, you know, making sure she takes all the medications when she's meant to take it. And she assumed that role, which she did an amazing job with. And then I was kind of, you know, I had to go to work and then try and get the other two to their activities and do what they needed to do, but also then trying to go up and down as much as I could to Dublin or into Cork and do as much as we could there. But look, you just have to cope. You have no other choice. You know, you just kind of have to deal with it and do the best you can.
Yeah, exhausting on top of everything else, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think we only kind of look back at it now and we probably realise how exhausting it was. But at the time, again, you're just in survival mode. You're trying to just get everything done and do everything and you kind of don't focus on that side of it. You just have to get on with it.
Yeah. And so, Isabel, when the treatment started, what was a typical week for you?
So all of my treatments, it was 6 months, but the first 2 months were like the same. And then over the 4 months after that, they changed slightly. So you'd have a plan from month to month of the days and the weeks that you'd be going up. So the first, like my very first treatment that I had, I did all 5 days in Crumlin and all of it was being done in the St. John's ward, like all done there. And then obviously because we live in Cork, it was then moved to some of it being in the Mercy in Cork City. So I would have the 3 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, would be the long days of chemo that I would do like all day in the Mercy. And then I'd have another day on the next Monday. And then you'd have about a week and a bit off where you aren't taking any chemo drugs to let your body like settle and actually use them.
And when you started on the chemo, like how long does it take before you really start to feel the effects of it? I mean, in the kind of negative way, because it packs a wallop.
Yeah, it definitely does. It was pretty immediate, really. Other than you would have a lot of like tablets and things to try and counteract the side effects of it. So like a lot of nausea, a lot of tiredness, just this kind of like loss of energy, really. And then obviously there would be kind of other ones like headaches and you know, like aches and pains and kind of that thing. It depended on which type of chemo, though, that you were getting, depending on the day.
Okay. Oh, so there's different sorts that they were giving you.
Yeah, there's like different types of chemos. So I think I'd have 3 different types on the first day, and then second and third day, I might have a second round of one of the ones that I had the day before.
Okay. And so then over time, Isabel, did that, you know, decrease somewhat in that you were able to be at home more and there wasn't treatments every day, for instance?
Like I had a lot of, obviously the first week was like all new. It was trying to figure out what types of things suited me, like different tablets and things, you know, which ones worked. And that was all in Crumlin, so obviously I wasn't at home at all for about a week and a bit, maybe. But then when it started coming back to having it in the Mercy, I would only be going up to Dublin once a month, and then I'd be at home, staying at home, go to school kind of thing. So it became a lot more normal. It was part of just my daily routine at that stage to take all the medicine at the different times.
How many tablets did you have to take every day?
A lot. It was like during the time where I was getting chemo, it was about 20 to 30 Crikey. Different tablets a day. And then those would be spread over, I think it was every 6 hours. And then another type of one would be at around 2 o'clock every day. So you'd have to keep track of those.
Oh, my. But I'm assuming Mam was over all of that and had all that organized.
Yeah. So they would tell you in the hospitals at the very start like how much you had to take and for how long, but trying to keep track of like which tablets was which and all that kind of stuff was obviously very confusing. But Mum did do very well at keeping it on a track, and even I would remember, I would forget, and she'd always be on time remembering, you have to take this now, you have to take this after that. And I don't know how she did it, really.
Yes. That's my mother's superpower. You never know, in the future, you'll probably develop it yourself at some point. It all happened very quickly at the start. When did you tell your friends about it?
Well, it was over summer, so I wasn't going into school, and I had started before I could tell them because it all happened so quickly. So I think it was kind of, I would pick, you know, one or two first, and I'd text them. And it's kind of like thinking, how do you say this to like someone who was, they're also like 14, you know, how do you say this to them and not scare them? And like, so I'd message them, and I messaged them probably the first week a little bit, not as much. And then kind of, as I started to get into a more routine over the next week or two, it was messages being sent out, you know, just telling them, letting them know.
Yeah. And what kind of reactions did you get, especially at the start? Because I think people might not know what to say. That kind of might be a bit awkward about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was kind of thinking it like that. I was kind of going, I don't want to put them in a strange position, but I guess I can't really say it any other way. So it was also over text, so I didn't really see their, like, you know, reaction in real time. But it was all a lot of like, oh my God, that's awful. Like, I hope that you're doing well, and like, let me know if you need anything, always here to talk, all this kind of thing. So all very supportive, but again, it's like, how does a 14-year-old deal with that?
Yeah. And then when you were able to start going back to school a bit, were you able to make it in every day, and in the days you were in, was that must have been pretty tiring, I imagine.
Yeah. So I wouldn't go in the days that I had a chemo like cycle going, because I would just be so knocked out after it, and also coming out from the hospital and stuff wouldn't have worked particularly well. But if I had it on the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'd go in Thursday and Friday, even if I was tired. And then I mightn't be going in for full days. I don't think I did a full day properly, but I'd be going in for as much as I could. And that happened throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. And towards the end, though, did you find you were able to go in more?
Yeah, like on the weeks that I didn't have any, I'd be in every day, and like I might come home like, you know, maybe an hour or something before school finished, just because it was a long day. But it was pretty much, I was in as many classes as I could be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Brendan, as I understand it, you became aware of Make-A-Wish fairly early in this process.
Yeah, it's something that gets mentioned quite quickly. You know, the consultant and the nurse, when they're kind of talking to you about the diagnosis and the plan, they brought it up fairly early to kind of say, and look, you know, you might have something good to look forward to as well. And you know, it's something that over the 6 months, it was something positive to talk about all the time. You know, when you were thinking about it, you'd say to Isabel, you'd say, well, have you thought more about what you want to do for your wish? And she'd, you know, we'd talk about different sorts of things that we could possibly do. But I always knew, no matter what I was kind of talking about, I always knew it was going to be horse related, because she's horse mad. She eats, sleeps, drinks horses. So I always knew it was going to come back to something related to horses. So it was, when we did get the opportunity to do the wish, it was just amazing what she was able to do. But it's not only just the wish itself, it was the kind of the hope that we give you, the thought of the positive things to talk about, and kind of, you know, deal with as you're going through the negative stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So it really did make it, it wasn't just a day, it was actually the build up to it, to talk about it, the after it, you know, how they've been to us since it's actually she got her wish, they've still been in contact with us. You know, we got a care package then as well after it, you know, with other stuff for her. It was just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, no, and just if people are wondering, it was what Isabel wanted to do was meet show jumper Kian O'Connor, and that was granted. When Isabel had made a final decision, how long did it take before Make-A-Wish came back to you and said, yeah, okay, we have him?
It was quickly enough. They were able to say they had him, but I suppose Kian is so busy with going all over the world on international show jumping, you know, it was hard to pin down a time to actually be there when he would be there. But the great thing about it, it wasn't just to meet him, it was for him to actually give a training session with Isabel's own pony, and she was able to go up there, and he gave us a huge amount of time, and it was just an amazing place. It's a fantastic facility he has up in Carlswood, and you know, he sat down and had lunch with us afterwards, and he just gave us so much time, and it was just fantastic. And also we were able to stay in Carton House then as well, which isn't too far from there. And they were just fantastic to us as well. They gave us afternoon tea when we got back from there. And, you know, Make-A-Wish had a photograph already in the hotel room when we got in there. And they had little packages for Isabel and the other children as well. So it was just fantastic. They thought of everything.
Yeah, so it was a whole day. It wasn't just meet him for a selfie kind of job.
No. He gave us a huge amount of time.
Yeah. And Isabel, when the treatment came to an end at the end of the 6 months, then, you know, what did the doctor say to you at that point?
Well, I had it was earlier on in my treatment that they had come bounding into my hospital room, where we were just, you know, having lunch and dancing around. We're going, what are they on about? And it was to tell us that everything was going really well, and that it looked like I would be only need the 6 months, and just to see it out, that it'll be all done. So obviously earlier on than we had expected, it was so relieving to hear that. And then obviously I got to ring the bell at the end of my treatment. So that was in January of 2024. Just an emotion filled day. I thought it would not be that big of a deal, because I already knew that it had, you know, been over and I had done my final appointments and all this kind of stuff. But ringing the bell and reading out the slip that they give you to say before you ring it, it was just overcome by emotion.
You had to do an awful lot of growing up in a fairly short space of time, I think.
Yeah, I'd say I've always been a little bit more mature than my age, but I think it definitely did force me to become a lot more mature, because I had to go through so much that like a child wouldn't normally go through.
Yeah. And when you think about the future now, has your view of the future changed since before all this happened?
Yeah, well, I think it definitely made me feel more grateful for like the things that were like normal in my everyday life, but not being able to do any of that for so long, it like made me realize just how much everything actually meant to me, especially with like the horses and like being able to be around them and being able to ride and all kind of stuff. And then just like simple things like going out with your friends and your family and stuff without having to worry about, you know, picking up infection and making sure that you were all safe.
Yeah, and being able to do those ordinary, normal things again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so what year are you in now?
I'm in transition year right now.
Ah, right, okay. So that's kind of that's handy enough. Have you thought about what you might do after school when the Leaving Cert is over?
Yeah, well, I've thought about, like, obviously with the guidance counsellors and stuff in school, and I've always said that I've wanted to do veterinary, but I'm not sure if it's still the goal, but you know, it'll be hard work. But I might do something sciencey or equine based or something like that.
All right. Okay. Well, I suppose no great surprise there, really. Brendan, apart from being relieved, you must be enormously proud of your daughter.
Massively. Yeah. I don't get emotional that much, but even when your researcher was talking to us earlier, I felt the emotion. But she's amazing. I tell her all the time that she's amazing, that she, the way she dealt with it, and in fairness, she was very modest, because she'd say, "Dad, I'm only just sitting here. You know, I'm just lying in the bed." And I would be saying, "But you were being very calm about it. You're not complaining about what they, no matter what they said they needed to do, you know, with like the operations and, you know, putting in the port and all sorts of different poking and prodding and all that kind of stuff. She didn't complain once, you know, and you'd just be so proud of how strong she was. But, you know, I couldn't imagine, you know, how other people deal with it as well. You know, we were very, I always say we were very unlucky, but very lucky, you know, very unlucky that she was diagnosed with cancer, but very lucky with the type of cancer that she did get, that it was very treatable, you know. And when you're in the hospitals up there, you see so many different people and so many different types of cancer, and you just thank your lucky stars that you got through the other side of it and that you can do it. But you know, she was just amazing through the whole thing, and she deserved every bit of the wish that she got. You know, so we couldn't thank them more for it. It was just an amazing experience, and she deserved every bit of it.
Yeah, indeed. Brendan and Isabel, thank you both so much for speaking with us today. The very best of the two, ye and the rest of the family, indeed. Thank you again. That was Brendan and Isabel McCarthy there. So let's make 2026 the biggest wish week yet. Every cent matters. You can donate online at makeawish.ie/donate. makeawish.ie/donate. And many, many people texting in to say, indeed, pretty much saying the same thing, that Isabel is an extremely impressive young woman and that her parents should be extremely proud of her.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.